Wow, so wonderful to see you today. I'm so glad that you have been led of the Lord to be with us here today. We see some of our parents of some of our people here and some new faces, so good to see you guys all. Today we're going to be taking a quick look at one of our books of the New Testament as we have been going through this series in the New Testament, actually through the whole Bible. When I think about this book of 3 John that we're going to look at today, that I think back to some years back where the question was asked of a population looking at an election, which is more important to you in potential candidates that are being voted for? Is it more important to you that the candidate be a person of ability? Or is it more important that the person be a candidate of integrity? Now, where do you think the general population sided? Do you think they sided on the ability part, or did they side on the integrity part? They did. They said, we just want someone who's able to prosper our country, to, you know, help us actually have more money, is the way it worked out. It's not so important that the candidate be one who is honest, faithful to his wife, etc. And I must admit that when I read the article, my heart sank because I thought, wow, we have sunk to this place where truth and integrity are not that important to us today. There was a reporter some years back in 1996 in the USA Weekend who reported on religion in regard to how important a truth is to people. And this was the most significant comment that I think was made in this article. How can I hold my truth to be the truth when so many others see truth differently? Have you had someone say something like that to you? Well, that's your truth. Your truth isn't necessarily my truth. The way it's said oftentimes in my country, in the United States right now, is, well, those are your facts, but let me tell you my facts. And it makes me wonder, well, I thought facts were facts. But we seem to be mixing up facts and opinion. In fact, I was thinking about this morning. I was laying awake in bed, and I was thinking, where are those days when somebody came on the TV and actually just told you facts? It seems like everything is shifting more toward discussion about the news rather than actually giving us the actual facts of the news or the facts of... And in our present situation right now with the coronavirus spreading throughout the world, you know what people need? Not opinion. They need facts, because the rumors are just flying all over the place about this. So that, as we've seen in the last week here in Singapore, there's a shortages of food because people think that they're going to be without food for a long time, and all the shelves have been taken up. And we all really need to know what the truth is, don't we? Our lives need to be based upon the truth. Because if it's not truth, then we're just going to follow the next person and the proverbial, you know, walk off the cliff. Truth is still truth, even if no one believes it. Do you believe that? And a lie is still a lie, even if everyone believes it. So even the person who says, well, your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth, you should ask them when they say that, well, is that true, what you just said? Because there is a sense of absolute truth that is undergirding our whole existence. Truth is truth. You may not like it, but it is the truth. And we're committed here at Crossroads International Church to teach the truth. I'm committed to teaching truth at Singapore Bible College. Over the years, I've taught many courses on Bible survey, backgrounds, theology, and preaching. Why? Because I believe that truth is truth. And it's my calling to help bring truth to people. And it's a privilege to actually teach through the New Testament. I've been teaching through the New Testament here at our church here, along with at the college doing the same thing. And I found that it's interesting, in the New Testament, of the 27 letters of the New Testament, that 19 of those 27 respond to some kind of heresy. Did you know that? I might be wrong about the remaining 8, because I don't know if I know the whole background to every book of the New Testament. But I can give you verses in 19 of those 27 books of the New Testament that will indicate that that book is being written in response to some kind of heresy going on. And so let me start by just asking you the question, do you need to obey God's truth? Do you? God's truth is the truth. I believe that you believe that, and that's why you're here today. But we need to personalize this. We need to ask ourselves, how about me? It's one thing for the truth to be out there, some abstract thing, but it's another thing for us to say, yes, I'm going to follow God's truth. I believe you do need to follow God's truth, and so do I. And that's why I'm glad you're here today. So as we've been making our way through the New Testament, we have in recent weeks, we've been going through the general epistles. We've already finished the Gospels and Acts, and we have gone all the way through Paul's epistles. For those of you that are new, we're going one sermon for each book of the Bible. So we finished the Old Testament last year, and this year we've been going through finishing up the New Testament. We have had one sermon for each of these, and if you've missed some of them, I encourage you to go up to the website, and you can listen to any of these sermons and even download the PowerPoint. And lately, we've been in the epistles of John, 1 John and 2 John, our last two Sundays, and now we've made our way to 3 John. And those of you that have been with us from the beginning, 3 years ago, when we started this 66-sermon series, you'll be happy to realize that next week, in the book of Revelation, there's our last sermon on this series, and we're gonna shift on over to a new series in the book of Proverbs. But before we do that, we need to finish the New Testament. So today is 3 John, and next week will be the book of Revelation. And we're making our way to the end of the New Testament era because we've been studying these books in chronological order. The whole New Testament was not finished by the time John wrote his third epistle. The book of Revelation hadn't been written yet. This is about A.D. 90 or so. And the New Testament writings were almost finished, and the church was very much relying upon traveling teachers and traveling preachers and prophets, basically missionaries who went from church to church teaching the revelation of God, not the same as the Old Testament, but how Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament. And typically, these traveling teachers would go to inns. Well, they wouldn't go to inns. I mean, because they couldn't go to inns, and they were unsafe, and there were few inns, these missionaries stayed with Christians. We still do this today. We have various traveling teachers that are part of our church here. I'm one of them. I fly to India in the morning at 2:45 in the morning. That's how you get the inexpensive flights. You just fly at 2:45 a.m. And I will be staying with believers. In fact, on Friday, before I come back, I'll be staying with Noah and Sarah, who were part of this church and moved to India back a few months ago to serve their people there. I'll share more about them later. And so John is writing in this context. And the third letter of John is written to a man named Gaius, who was faithfully extending hospitality to these traveling teachers who were going around among the churches, even though there was a man in his church named Diotrephes who was opposing him. And so John wrote to encourage Gaius to continue this practice of hospitality and support to missions. Why? Because it's in a context of error being taught all throughout the whole New Testament era. And this is a short letter. 3 John is one of the four, I'll put books in quotes here, one of the four New Testament letters or books that have but one chapter. Actually, we're looking at the shortest one in all the New Testament today. Those books, of course, are Philemon, 2 John, 3 John, and the book of Jude. We've covered the other three. If you look in your Bible, you'll see that 3 John, 2 John has 13 verses, 3 John has 15 verses. But if you count the number of words in the Greek text, you'll find that 2 John has 245 words and 3 John has 219 words. So it's a little bit shorter. And this is a great book. If there's one book I can cover in one sermon, it definitely is 3 John, you know, because there's only 219 verses. If you were with us when we looked at 2 John, I think you'll notice that there's some differences here between these books. You'll remember that 2 John is written to the chosen lady and her children. And she was making a big mistake. This woman was supporting false teachers. She was bringing them into her home. Whereas now in 3 John, we're going to see the flip side of this, written to another individual by the name of Gaius. So this is a man. And he says we should support true missionary teachers. So 2 John is don't support heresy. 3 John is support truth, essentially. And these two are written to a woman and a man, respectively. Interestingly, the woman in the rebuke against her is kept anonymous. Maybe that's quite gracious to do that, huh? But we have three people named in 3 John: Gaius, Diotrephes, and Demetrius. The mood is more positive because instead of condemning her, he commends her. 3 John is talking more about true missionaries as opposed to the false teachers that are referred to in 2 John. And in both cases, the overall theme is hospitality. Both this woman and this man are giving hospitality. But in 2 John, it's misplaced hospitality. It's hospitality toward those who are actually fighting against the truth of the gospel. Whereas in 3 John, this hospitality is maintained by Gaius, and it's missing by Diotrephes. So what does the letter actually say? Let's get into it and read the first four verses. This letter is from John, the elder. I'm writing to Gaius, my dear friend, whom I love in the truth. Dear friend, I hope all is well with you and that you are as healthy in body as you are strong in spirit. Some of the traveling teachers recently returned and made me very happy by telling me about your faithfulness and that you're living according to the truth. I could have no greater joy than to hear that my children are following the truth. Now, it's not hard to tell the repeated word there, right? Especially when I put it up there and I highlight it in yellow. Truth, truth, truth. John is concerned that the truth get out, and Gaius was a partner in getting that truth out. So it raises this question, and I hope you're following along. You've got your sermon outlined there, and you can fill in some of these blanks. Here's our question that we're going to answer as it relates to 3 John. How can we obey God's truth? I'm assuming that you want to do that you want to obey the truth. And that's why you came today. How can we be obedient to what God says? Now, the answers to that question are a multitude of answers, right? The whole New Testament can tell us about that. But we're going to focus on just a few of those, actually three ways that we can obey God's truth today. And these three ways we'll get from the next three sections of John's epistle. This personable letter revolves around three men. And I want to pull a principle out that relates to each of these three men. And here's the first one. Gaius. Gaius is a godly man who wholeheartedly supports the missionaries. So we'll look at verses 1 to 8. And then we'll look at maybe not so godly of a man here named Diotrephes, who's he's truly a Christian. He's a leader there in the church, but he's a carnal believer. He's a carnal leader. And he actually is opposing hospitality towards the missionaries practiced by Gaius and other believers. So John has a few words to say to him and to the church in regard to him, verses 9 to 11. And then near the end of the letter, he mentions a third man, Demetrius. He doesn't say who Demetrius is, but he says Demetrius is well spoken of everyone. So I'm going to presume that Demetrius is a missionary whom the church should support, the one who actually carried the letter, who brought the letter to this congregation where Gaius was worshiping, probably in Asia Minor, probably not too far from where John lived. So there's our overview of the three people this letter is going to talk about. So what can we learn from Gaius? I think the principle is this for verses 5 to 8. Help others get the truth out like Gaius. He's writing this letter to commend Gaius for getting the truth out. Actually, for helping others get the truth out. Gaius is a man who's practicing truth, but what he's doing is supporting people who are getting the truth out. And we need to do that. I think Gaius is being set up for us as an example of how we should be assisting those that are helping other people understand the truth, and they're traveling to help others know the truth. So who was Gaius? Well, you can tell a little bit by what he says about him beginning in verse 5. Dear friend, you're being faithful to God when you care for the traveling teachers who pass through, even though they're strangers to you. They've told the church here of your friendship. Do you see what Gaius is doing? He doesn't have to even know these people by name. He just has to know that they're recommended by those who are considered reliable. I think that's a wonderful truth there. If we know people who are faithful to the truth and they recommend others that they know that are faithful to the truth, even though we may not know those others, it's a wonderful thing for the church to enfold such people and work together in the truth. That's what Gaius was doing. And the word had reached John about how Gaius was so faithful to do that. So John continues, please continue providing for such teachers in a manner that pleases God. For they're traveling for the Lord, and they accept nothing from people who are not believers. That typically is the way that it goes. These who go out and teach the truth of God, they do so without help from other people who don't know Jesus. And so I believe, I'll just tell you my own conviction here, I try to give priority in my own giving to those who are teachers of the truth. I received a phone call some years ago from a woman in another church that I was attending, and she said, I want to ask you, should I give to the community chest, the Singapore community chest that gives to the poor? I thought that was a great question. I told her, I said, you should do whatever the Lord tells you to do on that. There's no scripture that says that you shouldn't do that or you should do that. I'll just tell you my own personal conviction. We have many, many wonderful people who are not Christians that are going to give to that. But those same people are not going to give to those who are bringing out the truth. So in my own giving, I prioritize my giving to those that are preaching the gospel. And I trust that God's going to help meet the needs of the poor and others. We've done this as a church when there have been tsunamis, persecution of believers, when there's been earthquakes, etc. We've taken up offerings over the years. We've given that money to believers who are using that money to reach other people for Christ. And you know what? The money's a whole lot better used that way because it doesn't get pocket in the coffers of, you know, various countries, of political people and all that kind of stuff. I think that's a wise way to do it. He says, these people are traveling for the Lord and they accept nothing from people who are not believers. I thought about my own journey as a worker for the Lord. I committed myself to full-time ministry in 1980. So if you do the math, you'll see that I've been in full-time ministry, the way we call it traditionally, for 40 years now. And one day I figured how much money it actually took to support me and my family and my three sons through their education and through here in Singapore, primary school, secondary school, college, etc. Would you believe it's over $2 million? So I'm a millionaire. I'm a double millionaire. Now, I think you know that the money has kind of gone through my fingers and it's gone out that way. But that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And you know how much of that has come from those who are non-Christians? Well, I can't say for sure that I know the spiritual state of everybody who's given to us over the years, but I believe it's zero. I don't know if there's anyone who's not a Christian who's actually supported us over that time. This is not, in fact, many people would not give to me that don't know Jesus because they say, all you're doing is you're just giving your own opinion about truth, and there really is no absolute truth. So they think what I'm doing is really not being very legitimate. So they're not going to support it. This is kind of how it works. We need to support those that are actually getting the truth out. So I think the key to this, if you could call this 3 John a postcard, because you could actually put it on a postcard, it's about the length of a postcard. Maybe I should call it an email, a New Testament email. You know, E is for encouragement, right? Encouragement mail. It's about the size of an email. I think the key verse is actually the one he says next in verse 8. He says, we ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth. He's talking about the missionaries. We need to show hospitality to them. Why? Because they have a role in getting the truth out. We have a role and we work together in this. So my key word for 3 John is missionaries. Or you'll see, as I have at the top of your page there, be giving. Make sure that we're giving. Make sure that we're not hoarding our money, but we're letting our money be used in the expansion of the gospel. Of course, there's other ways you can give. One of them is to pray. Occasionally, we'll have these days of 30 days of prayer for the Muslim world or for some other, the Hindu world or the Buddhist world or whatever. And I hope you have a regular practice of praying for those who still need to know the Lord Jesus. I think that's really the best way you can give. But you can give through organizations. My organization is called World Venture, that Susan and I have been missionaries with for the last 30 years. And it gives us the privilege to minister the gospel at Singapore Bible College. That's our main ministry, to the various nations that are represented there among our student body. About 25 countries, 20 denominations there. And it's a great privilege to do that. But there's no way we could do it without partnership from many others. We have 9 supporting churches in the United States that support us so that we can be here. And we have about 30 families also that contribute to us. We're grateful for a little bit that we get from Crossroads as well, but that's obviously not enough to support us here. But we all work together in the truth. And it's also a privilege that I have to direct our doctoral studies at SBC, the Doctor of Ministry program, the DMIN ministry. So I tell people, I'm the DMIN ministry director. I'm directing all the demons at the Bible College, all right? Because that includes about 30 English-speaking ones from the various nations who are getting training to get their doctorates. Most of these are seminary professors and key leaders of mission agencies. And SBC is the avenue where they are able to get trained. They come to Singapore twice a year. Several of you have met our DMIN students when they come twice a year, and they'll come to church with us here. And of course, hospitality is a very important thing. In fact, it's one of the requirements for those who want to be in church leadership. 1 Timothy 3 says that one who's considered to be an elder must be hospitable. And so we try to make this a priority. So our little apartment is filled with people 2 or 3 times a week. I know some of you haven't been to our home yet. I'm sorry about that. But in fact, Susan's not even here today because she fractured her right leg, the lower right leg, when she had a fall at Holland Village in the rain with Miriam. You tried to catch her, right, Miriam? Tried to catch her, couldn't catch her, and she fell all the way down. And so she's healing up. We live on the third level of the building there, and it's just not possible for her to climb up and down those three flights of stairs without a lift. And so that's been our privilege to do that. And I know many of you are doing that as well. You share your home to have people come into your home because you realize that you're part of sharing the truth, getting the truth out in partnership with others. And some of those are students. Some of those who come are people there from our church. If you're a part of the ladies group, you'll be there every Thursday morning to do that. The other way we try to get the truth out is I take all of my teaching. Some of you may know this. I think probably most of you know this. But at Bible Study Downloads, everything I teach, I put up there. And there's 33 courses now in English, 26 in Chinese. And these various courses are ways to get the truth out, to partner together. Others help me. They give me their materials. I put their materials up in order that their course might be shared. Some of these are not my courses. The leadership course is not my course. The worldviews course is not my course. The worship course is not mine as well. And so what we're trying to do is I'm trying to bring people in and have them share their expertise so we can get the truth out. And one of the wonders of the internet is you can do it right on the internet. People can go there. They can go to the New Testament survey link that is really sharing what we're doing in this preaching series right now as well. Now, that's in English. There's about 66,000 slides now in English, PowerPoint slides, on the website. And then there's also the class notes. So actually, this particular sermon I'm preaching right now, you can find it up on the website. I'll update it a little bit this afternoon. But then there's also translations. You'll see 9 different languages here for New Testament survey. So you can just click on one of those, and you can get the course in Chinese. And I'm trying to get all the file names in Chinese as well. If my Chinese is good, this says Matthew. Is that right? Henhao, huh? Henhao. So that's Matthew chapters 1 to 14. I can tell, but CMN is my abbreviation for Chinese, so I can cheat that way. But I can tell that's Chinese. I just can't read Chinese. And then I'm updating it all the time. So this is version 20 of Matthew 1 to 14. And this means there's 377 slides for Matthew chapters 1 to 14. I need to add some more from Matt's class because he's been adding so many more slides on Matthew. And it's the same for Indonesian. We don't have as much. In Chinese, about 35,000 slides. Indonesian, maybe 15, 20,000, something like that. Mongolian, Vietnamese. It's just it's a privilege to work together. The idea that John's saying in 3 John is, I can't do everything myself. I need to partner with other people. Gaius, thank you for partnering with me. And this is my thank you to some of you that have helped me on the website. I've had about 700 translators help me over the years to provide this for people in these various languages. And so you can get it. It's all up there, especially in English, because we have more up in English than any other. But I'd love to see it actually go into more and more languages. This is Christian hospitality. These are different ways that we can be hospitable. And I hope as you grow in Jesus, that you are characterized by more and more hospitality. That you just share more of your life. You share more of your abilities. You share more of your money. Is it one of your goals to give away a higher and higher percentage of your money? This is one of our goals. As over the years, we've given a higher and higher percentage. We started at 10% some years ago because we realized, wow, in the Old Testament, God said the very poorest of the poor can live on 90% of their income. Even the poorest of the poor were supposed to give 10%. So I thought, let's start there. And we've been trying to go up and demonstrate hospitality with our money, with our time, with our home. And I know you have as well. And this letter, this little postcard or email, 3 John, is an encouragement for us to do that. And so Gaius, in these first few verses, is commended because Gaius had given a lot of joy to John over the godliness that he had seen in Gaius. And he says, I really want to confirm to you, I want to affirm the support that you're giving to the various people. You'll see this chart on the other side of your notes. This is, unfortunately, it wasn't quite all that good. The letter's not all positive. We see help others get the truth out like Gaius. But sadly, in the middle of the letter, we see a man named Diotrephes. And I think the principle here is don't hinder missions like Diotrephes. You can either help the cause of missions or you can hinder the cause of missions. Gaius was helping. Diotrephes was standing in the way. He was a church leader, but he was actually opposing the missionary giving. Let's read verses 9 and 10. So John continues, I wrote to the church about this, but Diotrephes, who loves to be the leader, refuses to have anything to do with us. When I come, I will report some of the things he's doing and the evil accusations he's making against us. Not only does he refuse to welcome the traveling teachers, he also tells others not to help them. And when they do help, he puts them out of the church. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine? Can you imagine me finding out that you are supporting other missionaries? And I say, what are you doing supporting them? You should be giving your money to us. And then you get excommunicated because of your generous heart toward missionaries. Well, just a word of comfort. It's not going to happen because all three of your elders in this church are missionaries. All right? We have an appreciation for missions. We have a heart to do this, and we have a heart to help others. But imagine that actually happening in our church. Diotrephes, actually, his name means nourished by Zeus. Now, a lot of people in the early church, they had a pagan name like that. But when they became Christians, they ended up changing their names. And yet, we don't see that with Diotrephes. Any of you change your name after you became a Christian? You just have a... Some of us are from Christian homes, but a lot of times my students will tell me that they're named after some Chinese deity or some kind of pagan idea, but then when they become a Christian, they change their name to Grace or John or Samuel or something like they take on some kind of a biblical name. Nourished by Zeus. John says he was doing three things that were hindering the gospel. Number one, he was gossiping about John. I wonder what he said about John. Oh, that John, you know, that man's a greedy man. And he's so stubborn in his ways. You know, the guy's an old man. And you know how it happens to old people. They just don't change anymore. And they're not open to new ideas. I don't know what he was saying about John. But he was gossiping about John. And therefore, he was hindering the church. He refused the missionaries that came to the church. I don't know practically how that happened, but I mean, if you can imagine, we often have missionaries who will come on in, they'll join our services, Can you imagine one of us, a Diotrephes, finding out that someone coming in the door is a missionary and saying, excuse me, you're really not welcome here. We don't really have money to help you. Would you go downstairs and go to one of the other churches? There's about eight churches, I think, that have worship services here in the YMCA every Sunday. And you can choose. Go to one of the other churches if you're a missionary. Can you imagine just rejecting someone because of that, thinking perhaps all they're after is money? And then he threw out the supporters as well. People actually got kicked out of the church because of their generosity. We should kick out the people who are stingy, don't you think? Not the people who are I'm just kidding. But here he's actually fighting against what God is saying here. Jesus said we need to be his disciples and follow him. If you want to talk about generosity, you will not find a better example than Jesus himself. He left the riches of heaven to come here. But what Diotrephes was doing was he was setting up these hindrances to getting the truth out. Now, oftentimes the question comes up, yeah, we should be careful about people who are doing the wrong things, but we really shouldn't be mentioning them by name. I used to think that. I used to think, well, there's a false teacher, and some of you are kind of being led astray by him, but I really don't want to mention the person by name. Now, you'll know that if you've been around, that I don't do that, but I used to say, I'm not going to mention the person by name. John did. John mentioned Diotrephes by name. He didn't say, oh, there's a man in your church, kind of like you all kind of know what his name is, but I'm not going to say it. No, he said, just to be clear, it's Diotrephes. This is the guy who's fighting against the truth. Wow. So do we do that? I try to, without being overly critical. When Harold Camping was preaching that Jesus would come in 1994, I went public with it and I said, no, he's not representative of Christians who are date setters about when Jesus is going to come. We obviously know that Jesus didn't come then. And then he did the same thing, that Jesus would come on the 21st of May, 2011. I was preaching here at Crossroads during that time. And I mentioned Harold Camping specifically by name, especially when Jesus didn't come in May, and then he didn't come on October 21st of 2011 as well. My son's birthday, huh? That would be a great birthday present for Jesus to come. But my son didn't get that birthday present. We need to be clear with people about false teaching. Thankfully, before Harold Camping passed away, he did change. He saw the light, and he admitted in a private interview that he believed that he no longer believed that anybody could know the time of the rapture or the end of the world, in stark contrast to his previous position on the subject. So if he even called it sinful, what he did, which is great, because he began to understand what Jesus said in Matthew 24, of that day and hour knoweth no man. And he added that he was now searching the Bible even more fervently, not to find dates, but to be more faithful in his understanding. So thank God that as people were standing against him and saying, this is not true, in this case, he was able to see the truth. And before he passed away, he was able to try to clarify that. But of course, there were many people that were led astray still. And we want to make sure that we don't do that. You know, this has been a problem. This whole idea of hindering missions has been a problem for a long, long time. I recently found that this was a problem for the Apostle Thomas himself. Someday I want to go to Madras. How many of you have been there to Madras to see the Basilica, the St. Thomas? Oh, good. This is a beautiful, beautiful basilica that is over the ancient grave of Thomas, the, you know, doubting Thomas, Jesus' disciple. But one of the strongest and oldest traditions is that in AD 52, the Apostle Thomas took the gospel to India and then even to China. I've heard about the India part, and I haven't heard so much about the China. But there's a book written in the second century called The Acts of Thomas. It's an apocryphal book. This is not scripture, but perhaps it does contain some truth of the matter. You know, there's truth that's outside the Bible. Some things are true, but we would consider all that we find in scripture to be truthful. And there's an interesting account in the Acts of Thomas, right at the very beginning of it. And let me read it for you. That season, all we, the apostles, were at Jerusalem, and we divided the regions of the world, that every one of us should go into the region that fell to him and unto the nation where the Lord sent him. And I've heard about this. The apostles all got together, and they said, okay, you go to Africa, you go to Europe, you go to Asia, you go. And they made this agreement, and they spread out 360 degrees. Okay? Continuing on. According to the lot, therefore, India fell to Judas Thomas, which is also the twin. But he wouldn't go, saying that by reason of the weakness of the flesh, he couldn't travel. And I am a Hebrew man. How can I go amongst the Indians and preach the truth? Wow. And as he thus reasoned and spoke, the Savior appeared to him by night and said to him, "Fear not, Thomas. Go out to India and preach the word there, for my grace is with thee." So even Jesus said, go to India. Well, but he wouldn't obey, saying, wherever you desire to send me, but somewhere else. But unto the Indians, I will not go. Some of us can relate to this, right? Lord, I'll do anything, I'll go anywhere, but I did that once. I said, Lord, I'll go anywhere in Asia, but Singapore. Singapore doesn't need me. I said, I'm willing to go to any country and nation in Asia but Singapore. Well, guess where I've lived the last 29 years? You know, I can relate to Thomas. And while he thus spoke and thought, it chanced that there was a certain merchant come from India whose name was Abenez, sent from King Gundaforus. You say, King Gundaforus, that sounds really fictional here. Who in the world is this King Gundaforus? Is this really a King Gundaforus? Well, not too long ago, there was a coin found in India that says Gundaforus with his head stamped on this coin. This is verified that there was a King Gundaforus 2,000 years ago in India. There a certain merchant came from India whose name was Abanas, sent from King Gundaforus and having commandment from him to buy a carpenter and bring him unto him. Go to Israel, get a carpenter, bring him back to India, is what the king was saying. And now the Lord, seeing him walking in the marketplace at noon, said unto him, would you desire to buy a carpenter? And he said to him, yea. And the Lord said to him, I have a slave that is a carpenter and I desire to sell him. Again, I don't know whether it's really true or not, but that Jesus met, after the resurrected Jesus, met Abanas and said, you're looking for a slave, a carpenter to go to India? I got just the man. He's right over there. And so saying, he showed him Thomas afar off and agreed with him for 3 liter of silver unstamped and wrote a deed of sale. So Jesus bought him, saying, I, Jesus, son of Joseph the carpenter, acknowledge that I have sold my slave, Judas by name, Judas Thomas, unto you, Abanas, a merchant of Gundaforus, king of the Indians. So, and when the deed was finished, the Savior took Judas Thomas and led him away to Abanas the merchant. And when Abanas saw him, he said to him, is this your master? And the apostle said, yes, I wonder how he said it. Yes, yes, he's my Lord. Yeah, yeah, I've been purchased by this Jesus here. And he said, I bought you from him. And the apostle held his peace. In other words, he kept his mouth shut. because he realized he owed everything to Jesus, right? And on the day following, the apostle rose early, and having prayed and besought the Lord, he said, I will go wherever you desire, Lord Jesus. Your will be done. And he departed unto Abanus, the merchant, taking with him nothing at all, except only his price. He went to India with nothing except the price on his head, Jesus having purchased his soul. For the Lord had given it to him, saying, let your price also be with you, together with my grace, wherever you go. And the apostle found Abanus carrying his bags on board the ship, and so he also began to carry it aboard with him. I wonder what was in Thomas's heart. Okay, I'm going to carry the bags. I'm going to carry the bags for Jesus to go to the place I just said I would never go. And when they were on the ship and were set down, Abanus questioned the apostle, saying, oh, what craftsmanship do you know? And he said, well, in wood I make plows and yokes and ox goads and boats and oars for boats and masts and pulleys and in stone, pillars and temples and courthouses for kings. And Abanus said, the merchant said to him, yes, this is the kind of workmen we need. They began to sail homeward, and they had a favorable wind and sailed prosperously till they reached Andropolis, in the Greek also called Sandaruk, the royal city. And we know from records at that time that the Trans-Asia trade routes in the first century were extensive, going from the land of Israel into China and going into India by land, but also by sea. And in the first century, one ship was going from Egypt over to India about every 3 days. There was a huge amount of trade between Egypt and India. And on one of those ships was the Apostle Thomas. Going as a craftsman, of course, we know he didn't do his craft very long. He ended up being a preacher of the gospel, and he ended up being martyred in Madras, right? That's the city of Madras. He gave his life there, as did 10 of those 11 remaining disciples after Jesus died. In fact, you can go to visit the shrine. Some of you perhaps have been here to the shrine commemorating Thomas. And we are indebted to many Indians who have shared the gospel with us that have all ultimately come from Thomas. Some of the Indians are right here. We've got Indians and let's see, almost every section of our congregation today. You all owe your heritage back to Thomas. My fellow preacher, Andrew, from India, is preaching in another church today over at Calvary Chapel. And he also has his heritage that goes back to Thomas, as do all the Indians. Men like Ravi Zacharias and others that have mentored me, been from India and have been a tremendous, tremendous benefit to me. So right here at Crossroads, we have various Indians in our congregation. In fact, our congregation is about 20% Indian, in case you're wondering. About 20% Singaporean and about 20% American, and the rest from scattering of another 10 countries. And it's been our privilege to be here, to have people from these various nations and to train. Some of the people that we've trained have been from India. Atan and Chan Chan hail from India, and they are still on our support right now. In fact, we're trying to take to heart what John says in 3 John and make sure that missions giving is a priority for us. So we're committed to give 20% of all the money that comes from the gospel. Some of that goes back to India, like to Baby Chen and Susan, who we don't give to regularly, but we have given to them. And the whole idea here is to let good examples be the ones that we follow. So he says in verse 11, dear friend, don't let this bad example influence you. Who's the bad example? Diotrephes. He's referring to Diotrephes specifically by name in the verses preceding. Follow only what is good. Remember that those who do good prove that they're God's children. Those who do evil prove they do not know God. He's saying Diotrephes really doesn't know God in what he's doing here. So we need to help others get the truth out, and we need to make sure that we don't hinder missions like Diotrephes. But as we get to verse 12, we see a third person mentioned, Demetrius. And this is something that maybe you haven't considered, but I would like for you to consider to become a missionary like Demetrius. In what sense? God will lead you in that way. But I think every one of us in our commitment to Jesus, we need to ask, Lord, how far out? How do you want me to serve you? Where do you want me to serve you? Demetrius was willing to be used of the Lord and be the one who brought the letter there to the church, to Gaius himself. So he says in verse 12, everyone speaks highly of Demetrius, as does the truth itself. We ourselves can say the same for him. And you know, we speak the truth. Again, this emphasis on truth. Let's support people who support the truth. Demetrius is one of those. So you guys, help this brother. Maybe John was saying, we gave Demetrius enough money to make it to you and bring the letter, but he doesn't have enough money to make it back, or he needs to go to other places. Support him. Give him the hospitality he needs. Give him the money that he needs for himself and his traveling companions so the truth will get out. He talks here as if the truth could speak, as if the truth is a person. Hey, you know, the truth... The truth is saying Demetrius is a good man. You know, there's a personification here of the truth. And John saying, you know, we're speaking the truth here. The truth is the Lord wants us to pass a message on to someone else who will pass it on to someone else. We see this same idea in 2 Timothy 2:2. You've heard me teach things that have been confirmed by many reliable witnesses, Paul wrote to Timothy. And he says, now teach these truths to other trustworthy people who will be able to pass them on to others. So the idea is, I think for each of us, is we need to be thinking in terms of ourselves as a Paul, you know? As a Paul, who are we investing in? Like Paul was investing in Timothy so that Timothy could invest in reliable people who will invest in others. So there's a multiplication effect. Are you multiplying? That's God's plan for you to multiply your ministry in other people's lives. And many people are doing this, and I'm so grateful. I really didn't think that I needed to go to Singapore initially, because at the time we came in 1990, this report came on out about mission activity among Asian nations on how many people that it took to send out a missionary in each country. At that time, the worst was Taiwan. It took 50,000 Christians in Taiwan to send out one cross-cultural missionary. That's a lot of people. Not much of an emphasis on missions at that time in Taiwan. I hope that's changed. At the other end of the spectrum, we find this little nation called Singapore, where it took 549 Singaporeans to send out one missionary. That was actually the best in the world, or best in Asia, back in 1990. I was curious to see what it is now. And I was encouraged to see in the recent national mission study that in 2009, that had gone down from 549 to only 200 believers per missionary. So more and more missionaries going out, better supported, some, what is that, 29 years or 19 years later. But sadly, the most recent National Mission Survey in 2014 shows that it has gone up to 350 believers per missionary. In other words, we're slipping a bit here in Singapore. Maybe it's our prosperity. Maybe it's the fact that things cost so much. I don't know what it is. We hit a height right around 2009, but we've been slipping down from that. And we see that the number of career missionaries sent per church has also decreased. In the last survey, it says that for these 200 missionaries per believers that we had before, it says that 41 of the churches surveyed, there were 119, I think, churches, about 35% of the churches reported not sending out any career missionary. So there's a bunch of churches that had not even sent out one missionary. There's a few churches, quite a few, 23, that had sent out five or more missionaries. Now you may wonder, well, where are we at in Crossroads? We're actually right here. We have sent out four missionaries for this, or at least we're supporting four career missionaries. And these have been actually people that have come to us, have been part of our body, and we have sent out. Really, the first one who's gone on into a full-time ministry from us is actually Matt and Carla, that have been part of our body here, that have actually made this commitment to go to Bible college and that have been part of our fellowship here. I'm so glad to see that. This is a wonderful, wonderful trend. If you know our church's vision, do you know our church vision statement around love? I haven't reviewed it for a while. I probably need to do this more. The first is love God. Love God. This is our desire for you, to love God, first of all. And then once you love God, then you will love the church. Yes. And once you love the church, then you're going to love the nations. So this is our simple vision statement. Love God, love the church, and love the nations. I think it happens in that order because a love for God is going to be demonstrated to people, and it's first going to be demonstrated to the body, and then it's going to be demonstrated to those among the nations. So how are we doing at loving the nations? Well, in terms of what our church is doing in missions, as I noted, we're trying to give about 20%. We actually gave 24% in the past fiscal year. We'll have a financial report on that in our annual meeting coming up. We've been supporting the Koreas in Bangkok. We're committed to support them through March because they're moving back to Singapore. And we want to make sure that we're sending our money outside the country rather than becoming self-absorbed here. So this is money that we'll be reallocating to those that are serving outside the country. Some of that also goes to Atan and Chanchan, who have established a ministry in Manipur, really to reach the poor. They are presently in the United States. He will get his doctorate in December, and then they'll head back, and we want them to be self-supporting as Indian nationals by their own people. So our plan is to stop their support and reallocate their support. We do support students, but our plan, our policy over the years has been we support students in their training, but when they get back to their own people, it's the responsibility of their own people to really take care of them and free up more money that we can send actually to those that are missionaries. We have another family in Central Asia in a very, very important country that we don't list, so we don't give their name or their country, but they're doing amazing, amazing work, and they report back to us and speak to us occasionally about what they're doing. Jonathan Stone is more open. He's one of the singles that we support in Myanmar, and it's a privilege to be involved in him. With Noah and Sarah and their new daughter, Kezia, they are a couple that, for those of you that are new, that were part of our church for about 4 years, 3 or 4 years, and were involved in leading our young adult ministry. They moved back to India back in July, a year ago July, so they've been gone about a year and a half now. And we helped them to get back, but we haven't been supporting them on a regular basis, so we're in contact with them to see what kind of support they need. Noah is, really, honestly, he's the most trained. He's the only Chiru